is Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or if you're listening to the podcast version of this show, which you can do anytime, anyplace, anywhere, anyhow, anywho, anyway. Either way, we hope you're going to have a great day. We hope to make it a little bit better by bringing you up to date a little bit on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. And by that, no, I don't mean you're going to hear us talking about the Emmy nominations again here. Sorry, we've had some personal stuff come up, so we haven't done a new live show in just a minute here. But we are back live, and we're glad to be back live. And when I say we, I don't mean just me. I mean my co-host, Jeremy Branch, who's on the line. Jeremy, welcome.
I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be back because it's been a while since you and I have been able to do this. I'm also glad to be back because it's a really good time to be kind of catching up on things that have been happening in the summer. So as we wind down the official summer season, it's a great time for us to look back. We'll be doing that over the next couple of weeks, I believe, Julio.
Yeah, I think, obviously the big stuff that we haven't talked about yet is Spider-Man Brand New Day and The Odyssey. We're going to, I think, hold on both of those for one more week. I know it's been close to a month since The Odyssey came out. I know there's been a lot of discussion in the culture already. We definitely have stuff we want to say about them, but we want to give those a little bit more room to breathe. I think people are still going to see these movies in droves and haven't seen them yet. So I don't think another week of spoiler space is going to hurt. Spoiler space on The Odyssey is about a 4,000-year-old story.
roughly.
Yeah, so got to give another weekend for people to really not be spoiled by it, because they haven't had time to read it over the past ancient Greek civilization time till now. But yeah,
in addition to that, there's been like a ton of Marvel news that broke. There's been a lot of stuff happening at conventions, San Diego Comic-Con, announcements that made. I think both of us are going to be excited to talk a little bit about those projects as well.
Yeah, and we're going to, full disclosure, of course, that's part of the reason we haven't been live in the past few weeks is I do go to San Diego every year. I was at San Diego Comic-Con. Wasn't in any of those panels because I'm busy doing other stuff, but certainly, of course, follow the news and the excitement. And in general, just following, just by nature of being there in the midst of like the pop culture hub of the year, you kind of get a feel for what is the zeitgeist right now and what is going to be the zeitgeist for the next year,
this
5 years, 10 years.
It's no longer being recorded.
So what did that look like for you? Like any standouts?
Yeah, I mean, the real answer here is, and I think people are already starting to know this, I would like to think that I'm ahead of the curve by talking about this, but I'm actually probably like right on the curve. I think there's going to be a lot of people that haven't heard the three words I'm about to say, but there's a whole lot of people that have heard them. And those three words are Dungeon Crawler Carl. So this is this book series is written by Matt Denman. This is, folks, you heard it here, maybe not first, but at least maybe third or fourth. This is the next Harry Potter, guys. And it's not, when I say that, it's not, oh, boy, wizard goes off. It's not a clone of Harry Potter, but this is the next, this is the next literary phenomenon that is taking the world by storm and has the potential to be one of the biggest entertainment properties out there. And
so I know you've been digging into the books, and I have heard about it a little bit in the zeitgeist, right? But when you hit me up to just be like, you've got it up, I'm obviously really curious to know what it's about. Like, give me a synopsis so that I know what I'm getting myself into.
So basically, it's this book series written by Matt Denman, and I want to talk a little bit about the story here, not the story within the books, but the story of this. Matt Denman has been self-publishing these books since, I think, 2020, maybe slightly before. Like, he came up with this idea. He started writing these books. He self-published them on, ebook publishers through Amazon and print order, et cetera, et cetera. And I think had published, I want to say, at least five or six of them before one of the big publishing houses came to him and said, okay, we're interested. And so now they've all been reissued by Ace Books. And now the new books going forward, one of the things I think is cool is he's kept the ebook rights for himself. So he still self-publishes the ebooks, and then this publisher puts out the hardcovers and then the soft.
Really smart.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, like this is the next J.K. Rowling, except it doesn't appear to be, you know, using his power for evil.
Gotta be careful.
Yeah, we won't get into
milkshake
that.
Milkshake Duck is always awesome until you find out that Milkshake Duck is racist.
Yeah, well, and that's why, you know, I don't know the man, haven't met him, can't say, but like just based on the content of his books and the stuff that I've seen about him, does not seem to be evil. J.K. Rowling did not seem.
You don't want to disclose to me for some reason. You're keeping the synopsis like really close. To
no,
the
no, I'm going to get
a general idea about what.
I'm going to get to that in just a second. But I love the fact that this is like scrappy underdog author believed in what he was doing,
yes.
Went out there. I like that. That in and of itself is a story.
Yeah.
So I mean, you got to cheerlead for that guy that like. He is at the point now where he is reaping the benefits of believing in himself. And that's amazing.
I'm back a whole question now.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about the synopsis in a second, but what do you think the moment was real quick that it blew up? If it's been published since 2020, did something happen recently that would have kind of catapulted it into the zeitgeist?
No, I think it's word of mouth. And I think it just built and built. And then with this, with the major publisher getting behind it and giving it a push, I think we've reached the point where it is now breaking through to the mainstream. And I say that based on a few things. I say that based on the fact that they just signed a deal to do a television series version of this on Peacock. I say that by the fact that people are talking about the audiobooks as much as they are the books, and the audiobooks have become their own huge phenomenon, narrated by this guy, Jeff Hayes, who does a thing called SoundCloud Theater. He does new different voices for every character in these books, and you would not know. It's like listening to a full cast audio drama, and that's how I've been consuming these. I'm through the sixth book now. I'm just starting on the seventh, and the way he performs these is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that.
But I say that based on the fact that you at San Diego Comic-Con, some of these other shows, the cosplay is out of control. At least 50 cosplays of major characters and even some cosplays of minor characters from these books. These are books that haven't been adapted yet. Like there's no like actor that you have seen as dressed up as Carl in a movie yet, but people are still cosplaying.
That's a testament for sure.
Yeah. So there's that fact that I got on a plane with one of the books and the flight attendant was like, oh, I don't read that kind of stuff, but I love this series. I'm going to, I mean, the fact that these books are being sold in airport gift shops. Yeah, that there's no more mainstream outlet. They have such a small quantity of stuff that they can carry in these stores, and they carry just the most wide appeal stuff. And you can find the entire series in an airport Hudson News. I mean, you know,
I might be really excited about it. I have no idea what it's about, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. Well, so we're I think we're going to end up going into another segment on this because we're almost out of time on this segment. But all this is to say, like, when I say this is the next Harry Potter, this is not just me blowing smoke. You know, I'm not just like cheerleading for this book series that I really like, although I do really like this book series and I am kind of cheerleading for it. It is not something that I'm just like trying to make. I'm not trying to make fetch happen here. Fetch is happening. Uh-huh. You know, this is a growing phenomenon. And this may be the first time you're hearing about it on this show because it is a growing phenomenon, but it's not going to be the last time you hear about it. And I will say, you know, the same thing was true for me. I started hearing a few friends talk about it on social media, and, you know, shout out to Anna Faulkner, talk out, to our buddy, Chrissy Ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to give him his fake name, he'll appreciate that if he hears us. You know, they were some of the first people I saw talking about it on social media, and it's blowing up. But I will get into the first question you asked me when we come back from the break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Media, News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me. So, Jeremy, did you know that that song, Wonderwall, is back in the charts in the U.S.?
I did not realize that, no.
Yeah, so it is being attributed to the fact that it was the unofficial theme song for the England team in the World Cup.
And oh, sure.
So the interest in that has driven it up. But I do wonder if another factor doesn't tie into what we were talking about before the break, and that is the fact that Wonderwall is frequently mentioned in the Dungeon Crawler Carl books, and it is, in fact, the favorite song of one of the lead characters in the series, Princess Donut. So
it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, there may be a
favorite.
There may be a factor in there, but yeah, I was surprised. I had a whim to check the charts the other day. I was like, why is Wonderwall back in the charts? And like that was, it can't be that, can it? And then I went and looked up and found out about the whole, this is how much I paid attention to the World Cup. I had no idea. But
they both probably play an equal factor, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't know. But I wanted to get back to answer the question that you were asking before the break about Dungeon Crawler Carl, which is this book series by Matt Denman that I think a lot of people think is going to be the next Harry Potter, which is, what is this series about? I kind of managed to finagle around an entire segment without answering that question. So we're going to answer that question now.
You're slippery like that.
So aliens come to Earth, and actually aliens have been keeping an eye on Earth for some time.
I saw Disclosure Day. I know.
This is not Disclosure Day. They come to Earth and instantly, within seconds, subjugate the entire planet.
Okay.
By collapsing everything with a roof on the surface of the planet, and anybody that was inside, and everybody that was inside anything with a roof at that moment is gone, dead, finished. Then these portals open up throughout the planet, and there's this announcement that you have, I don't remember exactly how much time because this is the first book, but you can go into these portals and go down into what we learn is the dungeon.
Okay.
Everybody else that's left on the earth, you find out what happens to them later, but most people go into this dungeon. So we learn this through the eyes of our protagonist, Carl, late 20s guy living in Seattle, former Coast Guard, former Coastie, and is in the midst of breaking up with his longtime girlfriend because she's gone off to the Bahamas and posted a photo on Instagram that revealed that she was cheating on him. And so they break up over the phone. but they were living together, and she has this show cat, you know, like, you know, a purebred cat that she goes and she takes out to cat shows and wins ribbons, yada yada. Uh-huh. And the cat lived with them, obviously. So while the cat is still in his care waiting for her to come back, the cat gets out. Middle of December in Seattle. It's cold, snowing. He runs out to try to get her because, you know, he doesn't want to make this thing situation any worse. So he runs out into the snow. He's in nothing but a leather jacket and boxers, no shoes or anything, trying to get this cat. That, of course, is what saves his life because he's not indoors when everything collapses.
Uh-huh. I see.
So he, you know, he grabs the cat. They go into the dungeon. And as soon as they're in the dungeon, the cat gets a hold of this pet biscuit that then the cat becomes sentient because of eating this pet biscuit and is able to talk. So the cat is okay. Princess Donut, mm-hmm. the Queen Anne Chonk. So they become partners in this dungeon where they have to fight to survive and get down to each next successive level. That is basically like an RPG.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's taking your alien invasion science fiction setup and then using that to feed you into an RPG-like world. Is the tone of it, I mean, it sounds pretty absurd. Is it comedic throughout?
It is. It's very like Gonzo comedy meets high adventure.
With science. I love everything you said about it.
Yeah,
so
with science fiction elements, and you get into this expansive cast of characters and all sorts of fantastic creatures, but they get melded by the AI, the slightly insane AI that's running this dungeon. And they try to throw in bits of Earth culture too, but they don't really kind of know what the Earth culture is. And uh-huh. So you end up with these weird hybrid creatures. Like the one I always mention to people is early on, they fight a creature called a Krakaren. So it's
is it a mix between a Aaron and a what is it?
A Karen and a Kraken. Yeah.
All right.
So it's got like that kind of sensibility to it. They're really funny, but there's a lot of emotion, a lot of heart to the stories as well. Great characters. You know, there's a reason that this series is finding so many fans, and like I said, yeah, I'm starting to find that it's not just like the tabletop gaming nerds or the video game nerds or the science fiction nerds or the fantasy nerds that are into this. Like once people start reading the same way they did with Harry Potter, once people start reading these books, they fall in love with them and they fall in love with this world. And whether they're encountering them through the printed page or whether they're encountering them through these amazing audiobooks that I mentioned narrated by Jeff Hayes. And you know, eventually we're going to see this become a TV series. It's already been announced that Peacock has picked up the option on this. They're going straight to series. And Seth MacFarlane's company is the one that's going to be producing this show. So
that seems like a good fit, right?
It does. The sensibilities, I think, are there. These stories can get, I guess, a little adult. And by that, I don't necessarily mean like sexual, but they can be gory. And they can have certainly adult sensibilities and adult language. And I think Seth MacFarlane is a good person to like get the line between like the heart and the gonzo-ness of it all.
Uh-huh.
So like, I really like that. And I really like that they did make an announcement that Jeff Hayes is going to continue to play Princess Donut in the TV series.
You said that's one of the standout performances of the audiobook.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Carl and Donut are the two main characters.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are, Carl is the POV character, but Donut is like the female lead, for lack of a better term. And I don't mean that in a they have a romantic relationship, because they do not at all. They're partners. They're best friends. They are the buddy cops of this buddy cop movie, if this were a buddy cop movie.
So Seth MacFarlane will be voicing every other character.
Well, I mean, I would love to see Jeff Hayes voice every other character, assuming it was going to be animated, but I don't think they're doing animation here. I think it's going to be a live action series.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Does that medium translate? I know that's always the question, right? But if it does feel more RPG, more like an anime or something like that, does it work in live action? Is there a way to pull it off, you think?
I mean, when everybody goes down into the dungeon, they are humans, you know, other than Donut and one or two other characters. A lot of the creatures they come up against and the NPCs are not human, but at least and without getting into too much spoilers here, at least for the beginning, these are all mainly all human characters other than the NPCs and some of the in-game characters they encounter. So yeah, other than Donut and one or two other characters, your main characters would all be human to start with. Now, there's a thing, this is not too much of a spoiler, I don't think, but when they get down to the third floor of the dungeon, they get a chance to choose new races. And they can become, and some people do become, you know, shapeshifters or elves or, you know, whatever. Carl chooses to stay in a humanoid form, and Donut chooses to stay a cat. Several of the other characters become, you know, other kinds of creatures. But so, you know, you're talking, if they're going to do, say they're going to do each season as one of the books, which I don't know that that's the plan at all. You're talking third season before you get into anything that effects heavy.
To where
like main characters are an effects issue. You would have maybe one or two characters that would be effects heavy characters early on, other than Donut. I mean,
yeah, Donut would be I wouldn't say the trickiest part, because they did pretty good with Ted, but animating Catmouth is an interesting dilemma to have. Yeah. I think I even heard something about that with Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, I mean, Donut is a cat. She is I won't say a common house cat, because she would take offense at that. But she is an earth cat. She's not like a cat-human hybrid or anything like that. She is a cat. So she would be a cat. They have an in-game guide, this character named Mordecai, who changes race on every floor. Seth Green has expressed interest in playing that character, which I think would be very interesting and would certainly fall into the whole Seth MacFarlane
of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I don't want to spend the whole show talking about this, although I easily could. But like, again, if you don't know, now you know. So don't be surprised.
I'm looking forward to getting into it.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. He's a looking so cute. Sneaking round in a blue jumpsuit. Who's riding a motorcycle hero? Beep, 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 he's a blazing away.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us, and we're going to get into some of the other big news that has come out over the past few weeks, because I will end up spoiling all of Dungeon Crawler Carl if we stay on that. I don't want to do that. I want you guys to...
You were working towards it.
Yeah, I want you guys to go out and enjoy it for yourselves. Lots of other news has come out in the last few weeks. Probably, I think, the biggest or one of the biggest pieces of news is that we are getting a new Ghost Rider movie. This is not a continuation of the two Nick Cage cinematic legends that we got in the 2010s?
Yeah.
Am I right about
something
that?
Like that.
2010s,
I think? The Crank director did the second one. I don't remember who directed the first one, but yeah, it had to be 2010.
I got to admit, I don't think I ever even saw the second one. I didn't hate the first one. But
they're both interesting.
They're certainly of their time, and they're certainly, yeah. But we're getting a proper Ghost Rider in the Marvel Cinematic Universe now. And the man behind Johnny Blaze's Flaming Skull is going to be none other than Ryan Gosling.
I mean, amazing casting, right?
I mean, you know, he apparently is a big fan of this character and like was heavily involved in pitching Kevin Feige at Marvel on this, which is exciting because I think that Gosling's a pretty smart guy. Ironically enough, you know who the female lead or the female love interest in the first Nick Cage Ghost Rider was, don't you?
It is an interesting little 6 degrees of separation that Eva Mendes was the love interest in the Ghost Rider films and is now married to Ryan Gosling. You wonder if that's why he initially had interest in the character or if he was like, hell yeah, I'm dating the chick from Ghost Rider or whatever, you know?
I mean,
apparently it came out in 2007.
So that early. I guess that is about right. It's just very interesting that Eva Mendes continues to be the love interest of Ghost Rider, even if it's not on screen.
Yeah. That, well said.
Yeah. I don't know if she'll end up appearing in the movie. She's pretty much retired from acting. She, you know, has kind of said in so many words that I never really enjoyed it that much. And, you know, she's at home raising Ryan Gosling's kids. I think they have kids, don't they?
Yeah. I am a huge Ryan Gosling fan. I think that he consistently picks good projects. I mean, his role as Ken was fantastic. Obviously, he was great in La La Land, recently in Project Hail Mary, but like Drive is a favorite movie of mine. I think it's great that they got Ryan Gosling.
I think The Fall Guy also was terribly underrated. Like I thought that was a really fun movie and he was really good in it. And it kind of goes hand in hand if he's going to be playing the Johnny Blaze version of Ghost Rider. Johnny Blaze was a stuntman. He was not a movie stuntman. He was like a stunt cyclist. He'd go out and do like these Daredevil shows. So, you know, I mean, it does go hand in hand.
Yeah. However, all of that, and you heard the enthusiasm. I love a lot of this announcement. Not as thrilled about who is directing the film, Julio.
Here we go. Okay, go ahead.
So, first of all, it's not that... what's his name? Sean Levy. It's not as if Sean Levy has never made a good movie. I just feel like it's a mismatch for the material. However, it's perfect form for Marvel, but that's not really what I want out of a Ghost Rider movie.
Let's remind people too that this is going to be coming off him making another movie with Ryan Gosling that we will be seeing in theaters next year, and that is Star Wars Starfighter.
And apparently they had real good rapport, and that's kind of where they started kicking around the idea, which is great. Maybe Levy does have a real clear take on it, but he's the guy that did, obviously, Deadpool and Wolverine is very good. He did Night at the Museum, Free Guy,
Real
the
Steel
Adam Project, which was another Ryan Reynolds project.
Real Steel.
But going back to, like, yeah, Cheaper by the Dozen.
Date Night.
He's been involved in a lot of very studio-friendly, unexceptional, not all that interesting, and definitely not stylish projects. Is that fair to say?
I mean, we can debate that to some extent. I think that I'm a big fan of both Deadpool and Wolverine and Free Guy.
I liked Free Guy quite a bit. It was an enjoyable film. And obviously there's the Marvel and Star Wars connections within that movie that make him, going to those properties pretty cool.
Like everything of his, everything that you've talked about, everything you mentioned of that I've seen, I've liked. And I'm not necessarily saying they're my favorite movies of all time, but I enjoyed them. And I think you're also, I think you're also burying the lead a little bit here too.
Okay.
Because, I mean, like, all right, yeah, this movie, that movie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he direct an awful lot of Stranger Things and produce all of it?
Oh, yeah. What a great shining example of quality.
I know I'm not hearing you sit here and say that.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I just don't believe what you're saying.
Two great seasons of television, three great seasons of television, and then the rest.
I can't get behind that, and you know I can't get behind
that. I know. And honestly, I don't think Sean Levy can be held responsible for any of the shortcomings of later Stranger Things. So that's not really fair of me. And I don't disagree with your premise that most of his movies are good. I just, they don't have a... fingerprint in the way that I would like for them to. Again, having really liked Deadpool and Wolverine, you can go back and listen to old episodes where Julio and I talked about that. I thought it was a very fun film, and the same for Free Guy, but even the two of those, there's nothing in them that makes me say, that guy should direct Ghost Rider.
And let me just to be clear, Stranger Things, he directed two episodes a season up to season five, in which he only directed one.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
And arguably the one that he directed in season five might be the best episode in season five, which is the
Escape. Is it the first Running Up the Hill one?
It's Escape. No, that was in season four. Well, I mean, they still used Running Up That Hill in season five, but season four. No, Escape from Kamazotz.
Yeah, okay.
So, I guess there was a big Running Up That Hill presence in that one for sure, but, some of the most cinematic, I mean, he did Dear Billy, which is, that is the big Running Up That Hill episode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, again, these are, you know.
That was a great episode of TV,
huge episodes.
I did like a lot of Stranger Things, but not all of it.
Yeah. I do not have the revisionist history of, oh no, it wasn't good, which is very much, there was nobody, including yourself, Jeremy, I will throw you under the bus here, that was not excited for season five. And even through most of season five, you were pretty happy with it.
I think season four was almost peak. If for me, it was season one, season four, season two, then three, then five. And yes, I wanted to love it, but I know that's not quite on conversation. I wanted to love it. You're not wrong for throwing me under the bus there.
Yeah. So, I mean, there seems to be this revisionist take of, because some of the internet, this happens a lot too. And it's not just Stranger Things. It's like, I mean, I can point at Supergirl. I can point at so many other things where, like, there's a loud voice on the internet that didn't like something, and they drag it down for everybody else, and then the perception of it starts to fall. And
yeah, you said the same thing about Game of Thrones, though, and that's another thing I do not subscribe to. I know when it fell off a cliff.
See, I still don't agree with that. I still don't agree with that either, though. Like, do I think that season five was as good as, or season eight, rather, sorry, it was eight, right?
Yeah.
Do I think that it's as solid as some of the other stuff? No, it's not. Do I think it completely fell off a cliff? No.
I mean, it's fair. And I also don't like it when people like review episodes of TV shows, because mm-hmm. I think it's all serving one big overarching story that you can't really judge until it's over. And that's what becomes tricky about these franchises, is that I do love up until the end, is it's like, the last impression that you get of this story as it closes its book ends up being disappointing. And I think that exacerbates and causes us to look for the cracks before it.
I mean, the boys spent the entire last season telling you finales are hard.
Yeah, I don't envy them.
That's another example of where there's this revisionist take, because some people didn't like the finale. And again, I don't agree with them at all on that either. I thought the series finale of The Boys was brilliant. Because some people don't like the finale, they've denigrated the entire series. And I think that goes... Stranger Things is the one that really seems to get that worse than anything else, even more than Game of Thrones. But
how many seasons of The Boys are there?
I believe it's also five.
Yeah, I think so. Three great seasons of TV in The Boys.
Can't get behind that at all, man.
I know.
Especially
his own. I do mean that, though.
Especially when you add Gen V into the equation too, and Diabolical and some of the other stuff. And we're going to get more stuff in that universe too. It's so funny. Like, it's so funny that you hear all of that, but let you go to a show where those actors are and the lines are still insane. It's the same with Stranger Things. Like people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why I say it's this minority voice on the internet that drives down the social opinion of, like, the zeitgeist opinion of the show.
And nobody can ever take away season one of Stranger Things from me. I think that was damn near perfect television.
All right, well, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I need an entertaining man. We were talking about you, babe. assured me, well, I knew
you was involved in a robbery. That was 2-2, happened at a quarter to three in the main street.
So we went out.
I need to entertain a man.
And the Crimson Dynamo came along for the ride.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Co-host Jeremy Branch is on the line. Jeremy, did you know that Paul McCartney had a song about Magneto?
I didn't catch it. I was listening for it. I must have got sidetracked. I didn't catch the Magneto reference.
Yeah, Magneto and Titanium Man, Paul McCartney song, which I knew was out there. I hadn't listened to it in a long time, but yeah, I name drops a few different Marvel Comics villains in that song, and just seemed appropriate because we're going to move on to talking about the X-Men casting news that has come out over the last couple of weeks. And I think we're going to get more X-Men casting news probably this coming week with D23 coming up. I think we'll get some more official news, I think. But we'll go ahead. Do I even need to give a spoiler warning about the first piece of casting news? I don't think so,
but you can.
All right, so I know that Marvel played this whole game of, we're not telling you who Sadie Sink is playing in Spider-Man Brand New Day, and you just have to wait and see it in the movie, and oh my gosh, you're not going to believe who Sadie Sink is playing. It's Jean Grey. We all knew it was Jean Grey. We knew it was Jean Grey a year ago. Nobody ever for a minute really thought it wasn't Jean Grey. And they made it out like...
You can throw me under the bus here. I was actually like, it just seems so obvious. They're going to swerve us. They're going to swerve us. And call me stupid because I didn't know.
The worst kept secret since Benedict Cumberbatch playing Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness. The exact same thing.
Obviously,
the minute they announced Benedict Cumberbatch was in the movie, everybody said, oh, he's Khan. No, he's not Khan. Of course he was Khan. And of course Sadie Sink is Jean Grey. And we're going to get into more about talking about the movie next week, but it's not really a surprise to anybody with half a brain that Sadie Sink is Jean Grey. She's going to continue to play Jean Grey in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that we're going to get this, reboot or whatever, but she is the Jean Grey of the main Marvel Earth that we've been following for the past, 20 years almost since Iron Man? Iron Man was 2008, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
Coming up close to 20 years. It'll be 20 years by the time we probably finally get the X-Men movie. So, yeah. So we know that.
Two questions. I got a two-parter for you about Sadie Sink.
Okay.
First of all, do you, as a comic book fan, see Sadie Sink in the role prior to Spider-Man, and then now that you've seen Spider-Man, is she a good Jean Grey?
I think she's fantastic. I think there's been some what I think is ill-considered criticism because of the way that she was portrayed in Brand New Day, and I don't think people are taking into account that this is not mid to late 20s Jean Grey, who's had time to build up to be the person that she becomes. I think this movie shows us why she becomes the person that she becomes. And
or gives us a yeah yeah
yeah
gives us a
so
version of that.
Yeah, I kind of like, I felt the same way about Jason Momoa as Aquaman. I think by the end of Aquaman 1, Jason Momoa was Aquaman. And then they just totally backtracked on that in Aquaman 2, but that's a whole other story.
As I was watching, as somebody who collected X-Men, watched the animated series as a young person, when I was watching Stranger Things, I never looked at Sadie Sink and said, you know what? She would make a great Jean Grey. After seeing Brand New Day, I get it. I see where they're going with it. I think it works really well, and I agree what you said about it.
Here's the thing:
that she would be getting more criticism than somebody like Scarlet Witch,
here's the thing, Jeremy.
You know, any other number. Yeah.
See, Sadie Sink is this thing called an actress. And I don't know if you know this about, I don't know if you know this about actresses, but sometimes they play characters that are not like other characters they've played.
You make me so mad. She actually is a lot more like Eleven when you think about it.
She, right? Yeah, but that's the thing. Like when you have, I'm being a smartass, but when you have somebody who is a really good actress, and Sadie Sink is a really good actress. If you've only seen her in Stranger Things, you're only scratching the surface. I mean, she was sensational in The Whale. Which I have my problems with that movie, but my problems with that movie are not the performances in it. She's absolutely fantastic in that movie. So I know she can.
My more superficial take on it, though, you didn't look at her and say that looks like Jean Grey, or if she would be top of my roster of people I would call to play Jean Grey.
I mean, it depends on where you're placing the character on the timeline and where, you know, what level the character's supposed to be at. It. So there's a lot of variables here. Like
I'm just saying you,
but
the person,
that being said,
looking at it,
that being said, like the instant reaction was, and I think that you could say the same thing for when they cast Sophie Turner in the role. It was, oh, she's a redhead. Oh, she's got to be Jean Grey.
Yeah.
No, there's other redheaded comic book characters, and there's also a thing called hair dye.
Yeah. I think you're taking my point at a different.
I get what you're saying, but I'm saying there was this popular perception that, oh yeah, she's going to play Jean Grey. She has to be Jean Grey. It's the only character she can be. And I think part of that was she was a redhead. And
I saw people saying she was going to be the real Mary Jane, which is also insane.
I heard a little bit of that. And there were some other characters that were thrown around, and I had a couple of little pet theories too, but like, I get what you're saying. Like if you were going to be like super nail on the head with it, they would have cast Millie Bobby Brown. But
yeah, and no, and I think what I'm saying is prior to any announcement of her being casted, the thought would have never crossed my mind to make Sadie Sink Jean Grey. And if you asked me 5 years ago, who would you cast for Jean Grey? Sadie Sink would have not appeared on that list.
I think that if you were going for an adolescent to young college age version of the character, I think she would have been in the conversation for me.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, again, like
I felt
that's
the same way about Anna Paquin as Rogue. I feel like there have been times where like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine is a great example.
I'm
like,
with you.
You look at that guy and people are like, what? And then it works, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you more on Anna Paquin. I'm not 100% convinced that totally worked.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think if you're talking about, like, somebody that's the right age and that is a talented enough actor to pull it off. And, again, I think part of that is that most of the non-comics exposure to Jean Grey for a lot of people, whether it be X-Men 97 or it be the X-Men live-action films or whatever, the character has been older and more mature, and I think that that is the perception that a lot of people have of the character versus a late teens, early 20s perception of the character. So I think that makes a difference. So that is where I can agree with, yeah, that might not have been the first person I thought of if they were going for, you know, a 28-year-old Jean Grey.
But also tricky, superficially, to even translate comic book characters to live action.
Oh, sure.
Just in that jump, obviously, there's going to be a little bit of, like, that doesn't look right, you know?
Yeah. But because there's other casting that's come out about this. It's just, we'll throw that out there. That's the foregone. We knew that already. We knew that. If you're really being honest with yourself, you knew that a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But there has been some other casting news coming out, and it's been interesting because they haven't really said what the team is going to be, if they're going for like an original five X-Men, or if they're going for, you know, something that's more of a hybrid or different characters from different eras. But in announcing that Emma Frost is in this movie, that tells us that at the very least they're going beyond just the era of the original five X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the casting on that, which is Samara Weaving.
So Julio, if you asked me a couple years ago, would you see Samara Weaving as Emma Frost? I would have been like, yep. I mean, she has become one of the 0.2 up-and-coming actresses that isn't already signed with Marvel. she already has an accent. She's, you know, beautiful. But I think more importantly than that, she has this, like, sardonic wit, and she picks interesting roles. And I think she just, like, I think she could fit great into the role of Emma Frost.
Yeah, no,
I haven't seen anything yet. She might be terrible. It might flip from the way I feel about Sadie Sink. But right now, I'm like, yeah, duh.
Yeah, I have no issue with that casting whatsoever. And then we also got an announcement on Cyclops, which is Kit Connor, who I haven't seen in anything yet.
Neither have I.
He definitely has some interesting credibility out there, you know, in terms of like stuff that he's been in. Just happens to be stuff that I haven't seen. So I don't really know what to think about him yet, other than, you know, yeah, he's got the chops based on what he's been in.
Got a great physique. He did a picture not too long ago in Men's Health where he's, you know, he's got the Marvel build going on. I don't know anything about this guy, to echo what you said, but also with the direction that they are going with casting, I'm up for it. I think they've clearly got a vision that is separate from the cookie cutter go-to or what we would expect out of it. And I think that's probably the best way to approach this is give us a remix on the X-Men that doesn't feel overly beholden to the same old formula, you know?
Yeah, I suspect we're going to hear more in the next couple of weeks, and I'm very interested to hear it for sure. That's about all the time we have for this week, however. We will see you next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.